You're with Virginia on ABC Radio Melbourne.
Bridget Rollison, our state political reporter, has a heart-sinking story, which is on our website this morning. It tells the story of Karen McKenzie receiving an unexpected letter from the NDIS. Her son Jared has autism and severe intellectual disabilities. And the letter explained to her that funding that paid for his carers had been cut by more than half. The reason given, because the assessor was not satisfied that the following criteria were met. Value for money. Value for money for caring for this person with the severe disabilities. Now, Karen McKenzie's a single mum. She's had to quit her job to look after her son. Says her funding's run out. For the next 7 months, they have nothing. Can't do anything, can't go anywhere, can't see anybody. We can't have normal lives anymore. And you've got to wonder how sustainable it's going to be when you have a high-needs son and you have a single parent there who can't actually afford the time off to go and work and bring money into the household. She's also going to be relying then on handouts from or support from the federal government just in order to get by. So how is that making the system work as well? I want to hear about your experiences because we are starting to get a sense, and it was discussed last night on Q&A, that people with particular kinds of disabilities, such as autism, are they being targeted by the NDIS to get their funding slashed? Well, you tell me. 1300 222 774 is the number. Jim Mullen is CEO of Amaze, which is the peak body for people with autism and their supporters here in Victoria. Jim, good to talk to you. Good morning.
Good morning, Virginia. How are you?
Is this story of Karen McKenzie's, is this a surprise to you?
It's not a surprise, Virginia. My inbox fills up on a daily, weekly, monthly basis with horror stories like this one, but also, for balance, lots of reports about people being supported and new entrants into the scheme. So, and one doesn't balance the other, but the reality is that we have a lot of information and a lot of evidence that plans go up and plans also go down. I think the particular challenge in this case, however, is the fixation that the agency and others have with respect to the entire focus on cost in the scheme as opposed to value in the scheme. And when that's the overarching prism or filter through which the scheme is viewed, then it's always going to have outputs like this, and it's always going to severely impact families in this way.
So let's get to the cost versus value equation in just a moment. But do you believe that particular kinds of disabilities, in particular autism, are being targeted for budget cuts by the NDIA?
I don't think we have enough evidence to suggest that that's the case. I would observe that autistic people are one, if not the largest participant group in the NDIS. And as a result of that, you would expect that you would see across that sample size all of the anomalies that occur in the system occurring more frequently within that group. I do not have enough evidence from Victoria and from the rest of the country to assert that this is a targeting of our group.
Okay.
But clearly, in the minds of the NDIA, autism, autistic people, their families and the supports required are considered a growing cost. So I'm not surprised that people would make that analysis and would make that connection. I'm just not sure at this point it's entirely supported by the evidence.
Okay, that's fine. Then we'll be careful about making that assertion because, as you say, and I'm glad you point that out, Jim Mullen, just as you get the bad news stories, you get the good news stories of people getting access to a system that universally is celebrated for being in existence now. But talk to me about what that line might mean in that letter. The reason I have not funded your request is because I am not satisfied the following criteria has been met. Value for money. How does the NDIA assess value for money when you're talking about someone with autism and intellectual disabilities?
I could not answer that question, hand on heart, Virginia. This is an assertion made by someone looking at a snapshot of a case and that is not reflective of their entire life or their experience. And it's part of an analysis of people's schemes that we see, and it's reported not just in Victoria, around the rest of the country, that there is an almost accounting biased view taken of the way that plans are reviewed. I don't even know what the qualification level of the person making that assertion might be with respect to understanding what the value is to the family, but there's clearly an economic analysis or equation being applied to this particular case, which frankly one line in a letter does not go anywhere close to explaining adequately to the person who's receiving that news.
No, but it does indicate to us that clearly there is a criteria within the NDIA that they're using, as you say, some sort of, you know, accounting measure that doesn't make sense in a person's life, that then might lead you to believe that certain groups or disabilities are being either, if not targeted, then defined in a certain way that makes it almost impossible to meet that value for money criteria.
I understand absolutely why that connection is made. But the reality is, and much as I hate to do it, looking at this from an NDIA perspective, we have a focus from the top of the organisation, which is constantly on cost. That permeates the whole system, which means that when it comes to the analysis of this, lots of arguments will be presented within that agency around, we need to have a regard for the public person, this is public money we're spending, so we need to make sure that we get, and all the way that they would in a whole series of other contracting areas, focus almost exclusively on what do we get for our dollar. Well, that requires a level of insight and understanding that I'm not sure is evidenced anywhere in that assessment process. Therefore, this boils down to arithmetic.
Then we need to speak to the NDIA about that assessment process, and it's been quite some time since we have, so I'm putting that firmly on the agenda. Jim Mullen, I want to go to some calls. We've got some extraordinary stories that are about to be told by our listeners, and I know you'll want to hear them too. Before I do, very quickly, let me read you this text. I can see both sides to this argument. I'm a preschool teacher, and I see speech therapists and occupational therapists charging outrageous amounts of money through the NDIS and absolutely ripping off the system. I've asked that texter for clarification. They've come back with this. People are being charged $300 for a phone consult. I will say, Jim Mullen, that doesn't sound to me absolutely outrageous, but what do you think?
Well, the reality is that there is a series of controls applied to the scheme, but no market stewardship whatsoever. The biggest criticism I would level at the NDIA and their management of the scheme is their complete abrogation of the responsibilities around the stewardship of this market. Driving value for money is a two-way conversation.
Right.
It's not just about the value that we get in terms of the participant's life.
Yep.
It's also the value we drive out of the market that provides the services.
But do you think that's too much? I mean, you're talking here about a qualified speech therapist or OT. Their bills usually sit around, you know, $220, $200, $250. Is $300 too much?
I'm frankly, Virginia, to a lay person and to me hearing this, it sounds like a lot of money for a phone consultation.
Okay. This question has come in as well, or this observation. Virginia, if the question in NDIS is value for money, why did the government not review the providers instead of recipients? Is that where you're coming from, Jim?
That's exactly what I'm saying. The fact is that you have a responsibility for the administration of a scheme that has obligations on both sides. We need to drive and make sure people get the plans they need to live their lives with a degree of dignity. But we need to apply the same lens to those for whom the NDIS is a huge market sector in their business. And what kind of value do we get on that side of the equation?
Okay. Good to talk to you, Jim. Thanks so much.
Have a good morning, Virginia.
And you, Jim Mullen, CEO of Amaze, which is the peak body for autism, for people with autism and their supporters as well. Rebecca in Hampton's been waiting on the line listening to this. Rebecca, what's your experience?
Hi, Virginia. Sorry, I'm just shaking a bit because...
Don't shake. You're here with me and I'll take care of you. Don't you worry.
Thank you. I've got a 21-year-old son. He has severe intellectual disability and autism and physical delayed growth. Mm-hmm. He started on his NDIS plan just as he was leaving his special education school. So he's been able to get the one-to-one support through the NDIS that he's really always needed. He had severe kind of behavioural concerns. Yep. He was headbanging consistently all through his childhood. And I have a little bit of complex PTSD due to that. That's why I'm shaking a little bit, so I apologise.
Of course.
Since he's had the one-to-one support at his day service and outside, his behaviours of concern have been minimal. So the NDIS, I want to say, has been a game changer for him. But unfortunately, this year, his plan, his one-to-one supports were cut.
And why were they cut? What were you told in your letter from the NDIA?
Value for money.
And did anyone expand on that, what that actually means?
Well, I've been through a long process, Virginia. So I've had a local area coordinator, that's who you contact first, three different ones during his plan. So I spent 3 hours on the phone to the local area coordinator explaining in detail what was going on. Now, this guy was lovely. And recently, through Freedom of Information, I've got his report, which took 4 months to get. But it is so detailed and it is costed and is right on the mark. So when he came back, he was very apologetic, saying it's cut, because you don't meet the planner who cuts it. You only talk to the local area coordinator. So when I asked for explanation, I asked for a review. And the review came through and the same pretty stock standard value for money was cited. So I tried to contact the NDIS. I've got to say, the administration in the NDIA is completely incompetent at the moment. I've dealt with at least 15 to 20 different people who don't communicate internally. I've contacted my local member, Tim Wilson. I've contacted Bill Shorten. They were really helpful. I've also in contact with Zoe Daniel, who's been great. And she's been, you know, she had a meeting with me for an hour and a half to chat about the problems with the NDIS.
Rebecca, I'll need to go to some other calls and I can... The story you're telling is absolutely on the money in terms of what we're talking about today. I just want to ask before I let you go, where do you go from here?
Well, I'm at the AAT and I've been getting the runaround for 7 months. So I've
so you're taking the decision to the AAT?
It's already there and it's been there. I've got a final appointment in March. I've written a 20-page complaint to the complaints department. The complaints department's been a feedback loop until finally, after really extending myself, I had the ministerial department ring me up and say to put in another complaint after it's finished at the AAT.
Oh my God.
It's been horrendous. If you want to talk about value for money, where the money is bleeding is on lawyer fees and on administration.
And that's exactly the point that was made last night by Tanya Plibersek, Rebecca. Rebecca, thank you, and I wish you all the best, but thanks for calling in.